Still don't know why the show is called Takeover Vengeance Day. I'm calling it Takeover St. Valentine's Day Massacre, because that should have been the name of the show. This is your Takeover review, by the way. I am the Solid Monster. It is February 14, 2021. Appropriate that this show takes place on Valentine's Day, because I got nothing but love for Takeover tonight. Where NXT shines, it's these Takeover shows with these longer matches. And they go out there and they just let their talent do what they do best. It's all about putting the right matches together. On paper, coming into this show, this looked like a very strong show. So I had no doubt that it would be good. I have yet to see a bad Takeover. It's not a matter of it being a bad show. You can say that it was predictable. And a lot of the outcomes tonight were predictable. But when this show is over, if you are a fan of pro wrestling, if you want to watch pro wrestling to see good action in the ring, if that is the thing that is most important to you, then I don't see how this show could be anything but a thumbs up for you. If that's what you're interested in, then this show, it delivered for you in a big way tonight. This show is a big thumbs up for you if that's the kind of wrestling that you look for. And I thought they hit on all cylinders and they really gave people what they were hoping for. Finn Balor and Pete Dunne is a match I've been looking forward to for a very long time. I knew what to expect when those two got in the ring together, and I thought they went in there and they killed it. The ladies tonight, especially in that Dusty Classic in the opener, will be the first match on the card tonight that we're going to talk about. I thought they went out there and they did an incredible job working together. But the thing with NXT, the Wednesday show has fallen into this rut. And it's not that it's a bad show. I know what a bad show looks like. I watch one every Monday night, and sometimes on Fridays, and sometimes on Wednesdays, on TNT. The issue that NXT has right now isn't so much that NXT week to week is a bad show. It has more to do with the fact that week to week, NXT feels like a show that has no significance to it. There's no urgency to it. There's nothing important about it. A lot of the things that made the show super fun, it just doesn't have that same feel to it anymore. So it exists. It's there. It's fine. But it doesn't really excite you to say, oh, it's Wednesday night. I can't wait to tune into NXT. So the weekly show is missing that. The takeover shows are missing the element of the fans, which there's nothing they can do about that right now. It is what it is. But one thing that hasn't changed is the in-ring quality of these takeover shows. And it's sort of the one thing I think that we can always count on when NXT puts on a big show is that you know they're going to just knock it out of the park when it comes to the in-ring stuff. There might be that one match on the card that's kind of weaker than the other ones. I'll let you guess what that is. There was a match like that on the card tonight, but nothing that jumps out to me as being anything bad. Like I said, the wrestling was fine and we had a big finale. We had a big finish at the end of the show with the breakup or the implied breakup or the beginning of a breakup of Undisputed Era. Undisputed Era, it feels like they've been together now for about 15 years, 24 years. It's been a while. Undisputed Era has ruled the roost in NXT now for a very long time. Should have been called up to the main roster a long time ago. If the people on the main roster knew what the fuck they were doing, it would have been a no-brainer. Now, I can't say I really have a whole lot of interest in seeing any of these guys on the main roster because they would be fucked the minute they get called up. So they continue to exist here in this NXT world, but it almost feels like what more is left for them to do other than just do a breakup angle? So when Kyle O'Reilly was challenging Finn Balor all those times for the NXT championship, I was just waiting. If you remember, one of the predictions I made, I don't know if it was in the first or it might have been the rematch. I think it was the New Year's Evil match. I thought for sure the New Year's Evil match was going to end because Balor had already beaten O'Reilly cleanly. I said, well, if you beat him cleanly again, then that's the end of Kyle O'Reilly as far as challenging for the title. Adam Cole. What if Adam Cole gets involved and he either turns on O'Reilly or he accidentally costs him the title and you start an issue between Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly? And they didn't do it. But it was so obvious. It seemed like, okay, they're just dropping little teases here and promos and stuff where Cole was being overly nice to Kyle O'Reilly. And I don't buy him as a babyface in that way. Adam Cole is better as a heel. He's more believable as the annoying heel who thinks he's better than everybody else. That Adam Cole would not cede power and control over Undisputed Era to anybody else. But they didn't do it. Well, tonight they did it at the very end of the show. And I'm going to tell you how, I'm going to tell you why, and how it all went down. I also come bearing news of some new signings. Just before tonight's show, PW Insider confirmed there were some rumors about some incoming signings in NXT. There's a new class of women, I think. They're about to announce a whole batch of new signings. Triple H mentioned it on the conference call last week. PW Insider confirmed two new WWE signings, both for the NXT brand. First is Eli Drake, who was once employed by NXT many years ago. Back then, the name that he went by was Slate Randall. And it's funny, I've been doing this show for so long, I can remember singing this guy's praises, probably going back, I don't even know, maybe 7 or 8 years, when he either first signed, I think it was when he first signed, and he was going by Sean Ricker on the independent scene. He was in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. I believe Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle, the last man that he managed in wrestling was Eli Drake. It was Sean Ricker. He got signed. He was on The Rock. The Rock had some kind of reality show, I think, on TNT many years ago. The Hero, maybe, or whatever it was called. He was a contestant on the show. I think The Rock was a big fan of his. And you could tell he's a big fan of The Rock. Have you ever seen or heard an Eli Drake promo before? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, isn't that what he says? Yeah. Yeah. He's a little too much of a fan of The Rock and a little too much of a fan of Stone Cold Steve Austin. But he went to Impact as Eli Drake. Didn't quite work out in NXT. He claimed that Bill DeMott, who was the head coach there at the time, didn't like him very much. There were other rumors about WWE being unhappy about his posting on social media, things he was saying. So he got released. He was gone. He became a name as Eli Drake in TNA, won a whole bunch of championships. I believe he was the Impact World Champion at one point. And the last time that I knew, you know, as far as what his status was, I assumed he was still under contract to the NWA because he had been on NWA Power. He was doing stuff there up until the pandemic hit and everything just sort of went straight to hell. But apparently he was quietly released from the NWA. I don't know if that was something he requested. I don't know if his contract just expired. And since they're not running shows, they decided, well, we're not going to pay him, so we'll let him go. I don't know, but he was quietly released from the NWA at the end of last year. And as I think for a second here about the NWA, it makes me very sad. Because anybody who listens to the Sound Off every week, you know that I was covering NWA Power. And I know they have a new show now, I think it's called Shockwave, and I really haven't watched it. But it's not the same. They're not really, NWA is not really running shows now. Some of their talent are appearing at tapings that other people are producing, but there's no NWA Power, there's no NWA live events or pay-per-views or anything anymore. It's like they're trying to figure out what they want to be and do they even really exist? Can they exist anymore as a separate entity? And I don't know that Billy Corgan has really figured out the answer to that question. I think he really wants to make this work. He bought the NWA brand. He was trying to relaunch it and bring it back to prominence. I mean, the NWA will never be what it once was. But I enjoyed the show, and I was covering it on the podcast every week, and then COVID hit, and it was just one thing after another. COVID, you know, the way I look at it, COVID really made them sick. But the Lagana stuff last summer, after all the speaking out allegations and everything, the Dave Lagana stuff is really, I think, what, when the final story is told, will end up being the nail in the coffin, really, for the NWA. Because Lagana, he was the vice president. He was one of the head guys. He was the senior most guy in that company underneath Billy Corgan. He was Billy Corgan's consigliere. And not only was he overseeing, he was wearing many hats for the company. He was handling a lot of the production stuff, a lot of the YouTube stuff. So when he went away, that was a massive blow to that company, and they haven't really recovered from that. So you have all of this talent that's under contract. You have somebody like Thunder Rosa, and I'm thinking, who is left working for the NWA? The only two names I could think of are Nick Aldis, poor fucking Nick Aldis, who's just stuck in purgatory, it seems. I thought he was doing a very admirable job of kind of living and looking the part of the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. Nick Aldis and who? Thunder Rosa? Thunder Rosa is still under contract until the end of the year to the NWA. But I look at Thunder Rosa as more of an AEW talent. She's more on Dynamite than anything else. Who else is left? They let James Storm go. Eli Drake is gone. Right? Zicky Dice, Ricky Starks, Melina, Marty Bell, Brian Hebner, the referee. So I don't know that there really is an NWA left, I'm sorry to say. And Eli Drake was one of the last big names they still had under contract. So they showed footage of him during the takeover show tonight, earlier in the day, signing his NXT contract with William Regal. But he appeared on the kickoff show, showed up as a surprise guest interrupting the panel, which was Wade Barrett, Sam Roberts, and some random guy who I've never seen before, apparently from Barstool Sports. I guess he works for Portnoy. Whoever this guy was, Barrett was very happy to see him, because remember, Barrett, as under his real name, Stu Bennett, was doing commentary for the NWA at that time. So the last we saw of Eli Drake, Wade Barrett was calling his matches and calling his segments on NWA Power after Jim Cornette got shit-canned. Because of, well, we remember that whole story. They brought in Wade Barrett to be his replacement. So he recognized him right away. He was very happy to see him. And he cut one of his Eli Drake promos, borrowing from The Rock. Just The Rock's inflections and his tone and his mannerisms and his cadence. And that was always my big critique about Eli Drake. The guy clearly has charisma. The guy clearly can talk, right? He can cut a promo, but he so much dives into being The Rock. I don't even know that he necessarily realizes that he's doing it. But I can't listen to or watch an Eli Drake promo without thinking that this guy is just trying to impersonate The Rock. And even in his voice, he's trying to impersonate Stone Cold Steve Austin. Every time he does the yeah, like the way he says it, I hear Rock and Austin. You got to just be yourself. So that hasn't changed. Even this promo here, I'm thinking, okay, he's trying to be Rock and Austin again. That's really my big knock on Eli Drake. But it's very obvious who his influences are when you watch him. But he said that, well, I'm going to get to his name in a second, but he said that NXT might have a stacked deck, but while they're playing cards, he just walked in rolling dice. Drake said that he just changed the game. He mentioned the NXT North American Championship. He mentioned the NXT Championship, and he said that anybody walking around with those titles should make sure they have their eyes open, because he's coming for them. The name. His new name. He will no longer be Eli Drake. He is not going back to Slate Randall. And he is not going to be Eli Drake. I don't know if they gave him the option of being Eli Drake, but he didn't want to give over the rights to the name. And so he said, I think I'll hold on to that. That's what I'm thinking is what happened here. Because remember, there was an edict that Impact passed many years ago that said, if you leave the company, you are now allowed to take your name and gimmick with you. That's why EC3 was able to be EC3 when he came to WWE. A lot of good that did him. But he was allowed to come in and be EC3. So it's very possible he was like, yeah, I'm not going to give you the rights to my name. Just in case it didn't work out between us once before. Just in case things don't work out a second time, I'd rather you not have control over my name. And I assume he came up with this new name. I don't know that for a fact, but it is... Let's not pile on WWE. This very well could have been his own idea. But his new name is L.A. Knight. L.A. Knight. Which makes me think of L.A. Gear for some reason. I used to have a pair of L.A. Gear sneakers when I was a young lad. LA Knight. Sounds like the rejected name of an XFL franchise, right? The LA Knights. It's the new chapter for him now in his career. He's getting a second chance in NXT. It didn't work out the first time many years ago. He has developed more of a personality since then. But again, he's got to just, you know, be more of himself in his promos. Don't be The Rock. The Rock is The Rock for a reason. If you try to be The Rock, it's just not going to work. So we'll see how long he stays in NXT. I'm kind of surprised, frankly, he is in NXT and they didn't just want to move him to the main roster since he's, you know, he's got TV experience. He's not a rookie anymore. He's been doing this for a while. I think it's a good pickup. We need more people in WWE who can speak with conviction. He can do that. The other person, the other Impact name that WWE has signed is former Knockouts champion Taya Valkyrie, who, as many of you know, is the significant other of John Morrison, which gives me hope that we could eventually see John Morrison get the hell away from The Miz, and maybe they put him and Taya back together as a unit, because I always thought they were very entertaining on television together. They were, I think, in Impact and Lucha Underground. They were put together as a unit. They were very entertaining. And since I can't fucking stand Miz and Morrison at the moment, I would love for them to eventually part ways and for them to put Morrison and Taya back together. But Taya has her own aspirations, I'm sure, in the ring, in the women's division. She has worked in Mexico. She's worked all over the world. She's a former Impact Knockouts champion. And so she is now officially signed to an NXT deal. She is expected to be part of the next class of PC signing, so possibly as early as this week, because Triple H made mention of this recently, that this next class of female wrestlers is their biggest class that they have recruited. I just love the fact that they just bring all of these people in from all of these different promotions and the independent scene. They love talking about the performance center, this multi-million-dollar performance center that they built down there in Winter Park. But you can probably count on, maybe both hands, but you can probably count with a relatively small number of fingers the number of real stars that they have built from the ground up in the PC. For the most part, it's people they brought in from somewhere else who were already having success, who had already built up a name, and then they claim them as their own. Look who we made! Look who we made! That's how they look at people like Ricochet and Aleister Black. We brought them in. We put them on TV. We made them stars. Now they can make Taya Valkyrie a star because nobody knew who she was. Now WWE can say, look, we made her a star. It's amazing how that works. So an already strong NXT women's division gets a little bit stronger. Now with her on the roster, she's 37 years old. And so I am surprised that Raw and SmackDown, As much in need as they are right now, I think, of more female faces from NXT. Like Rhea Ripley, for example, is obviously on her way, either to Raw or SmackDown. We don't know where. She hasn't been mentioned since the Royal Rumble, so maybe they forgot about her. I don't know. We've got Damian Priest with Bad Bunny, but we have not seen Rhea since coming in second place in the Rumble. But I think someone like Taya, again, you could put her on the, you know, one of the main shows tomorrow. I don't know that her going to NXT, I don't know, it just seems like a weird fit. I don't know why you would go there first. Maybe that was her request. Maybe she said, please keep me away from the main roster. My husband tells me horror stories about it. I'm content to stay in NXT. But anyway, there's your news. Those are the two big signings for NXT. The show opened with the finals of the Women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. It was Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon taking on Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. That's a great point, by the way, that Paul Heyman, I see joining us here in the chat, our good friend Paul Heyman, who mentioned, was it Paul Heyman or somebody else? He said Taya. Well, I was thinking about Tay Conti. I was going to mention that too. Tay Conti is somebody, just to go back to the point I was making before, Tay Conti is somebody that WWE did recruit who was brand new and knew nothing about pro wrestling. I've told that story because she's done interviews since she got fired last year by the company. She didn't even know what WWE was. She thought it stood for something with prostitution. Legit. She thought it had something to do with prostitution. But somebody from the company got in touch with her because they saw some bikini photos on Instagram that she did a photo shoot with somebody. So, of course, that's part of their recruitment tool. And they brought her in, and even when she was still in NXT, she had made a lot of progress. And you can see, like, she was very athletic, and she comes, you know, she knows jiu-jitsu, and, you know, she's just an athletic girl, and she had taken to it very quickly, and it looked like she could potentially grow into being something big. And she was part of the COVID cuts last year. And even before that, she was very frustrated because they couldn't come up with anything for her to do. And now that she's in AEW, and you can see she's improved and she continues to get better, and I would love nothing more than for her to go on to become even better and become a big star and just kind of throw it back in their face and say, you know, you could have pointed to me as one of your big, you know, legitimate performance center success stories. And they didn't know what to do with her, and they just cut her and let her go. That's still a very bizarre story to me. I'm not quite sure why they let her go. But we had Shotzi and Ember against Dakota and Raquel. An excellent opener and a glimpse into what the women's tag team title matches on the main roster could look like if they gave a shit. If they tried, if they cared, if they put any emphasis on it at all whatsoever. We could get matches like this. This is what we're missing out on. Instead, we're getting ready for Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler to take on Lana and Naomi. That's the big match that we're looking forward to soon. We had a pump kick from Dakota, sending Shotzi down for a near fall. Kai missed the follow-up boot, got hit with a powerbomb. Slingshot splash from Ember Moon, got a near fall. So Shotzi and Ember, they cut the ring in half on Dakota. This was a little weird because for a few minutes there, they had Dakota Kai. It was almost like she was the babyface in peril, where they kept cutting her off and stopping her from making the tag. That's the sort of thing that you're used to seeing with the babyfaces, where the babyface is trying to get the tag and they keep getting cut off, right? And the partner keeps crawling over trying to reach for the tag and keeps getting foiled. And that was sort of the spot that Dakota was in for a while, so I thought that was a little strange. Later on in the match, Ember Moon hit Gonzalez with the Eclipse, and Dakota distracted the referee so he couldn't count the pin. Shotzi had a rally in the ring, hit Dakota with a TKO facebuster for a near fall. Shotzi and Gonzalez, they brawled to the corner, and Shotzi landed very awkwardly after hitting Gonzalez with a sliced bread. Blackheart hit Kai with a suicide dive out on the floor. So Ember and Shotzi hit Dakota with a Doomsday Device crossbody at ringside. Gonzalez wiped out Blackheart with a pounce. We had Ember Moon locking Gonzalez in a fish hook. She fish hooked her. Fish hook STF. Dakota broke up the submission with a kick and hit Blackheart with a Code Red lung blower for a near fall. So on the show, they have, and they don't normally have this for the NXT shows, the weekly shows, but they had a ramp to the ring. So, which I didn't even see until we were about midway through this match. I didn't even notice, but they did a spot where Gonzalez, so they're on the ramp, which is a few feet above the ground, and Gonzalez shoves Ember off the ramp, and she goes and takes a fall, and she hits the plexiglass on the way down. So that took Ember Moon out of the equation here for the finish of this match. Gonzalez gave Dakota a gorilla press. So she gorilla pressed her own partner, who I guess was, I think she was thrown at Raquel on the ramp. But Raquel pressed Dakota and then slammed her on top of Shotzi in the ring. Gonzalez then hit her finisher on Shotzi, and both heels piled onto Blackheart for the win. So Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez are the first ever Women's Dusty Cup winners, which now earns them the right to challenge for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles currently held by the Holy One herself, Nia Jax, and Shayna Baszler, who are the current tag team champions. And there's two ways you can go with this. Now that we have heel challengers. We have heel challengers in these two, right? Dakota and Raquel. and we have heel champions. So I can't really see them doing that as a match. Nia and Shayna, though, we know they're going to be defending the tag team titles soon against Lana and Naomi, right? Lana and Naomi, I believe, are the number one contenders for the women's tag team titles, right? Okay, that's what I think about that. It is possible that Lana and Naomi could win the women's tag team titles. It's possible. But only for the purposes of then turning around and dropping them, hopefully very quickly, to Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. So you could have them as transitional champions. That's one option. The other option I was thinking about, and I didn't mention this on the podcast earlier because I changed my prediction on who I thought was going to win the tournament. I should have kept my prediction because I was fucking right. And then, of course, I changed it, so I was wrong. But there's another way they can go with it. If you watch SmackDown this week, then you saw Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair doing a promo. They were interrupted by Nia and Shayna. A brawl broke out. It's going to be Shayna. It's going to be Sasha against Bianca Belair at WrestleMania. How do you get there? What do you do on this road to WrestleMania to build friction between Sasha and Bianca? Well, what if you built to a tag team title match? Now, they might want to give Lana and Naomi the shot first, but whether it's on TV this Friday, at Elimination Chamber next Sunday, maybe it's the following week, you build to a women's tag team title defense. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defending against Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. And Sasha and Bianca become women's tag team champions. And from there, whenever they feel like doing it, whether it's on NXT, whether it's on the Fastlane card, which is the next pay-per-view in March, you do Sasha and Bianca against Dakota and Raquel, which I think would be a fucking great match, and that's where they drop the belts. There's a miscommunication, something happens, maybe Sasha turns heel on Bianca. Sasha works better as a heel anyway, so I wouldn't mind that. But they drop the belts to the NXT girls. You can go either way with it. I kind of like that idea better because it's just a better fucking match. I could definitely see that happening. But like I said, part of the reason I changed my pick was because I see bigger things for Raquel Gonzalez. Look, we all see bigger things, I think, for this woman. Clearly they do. But that's long term. I'm talking like next 2 months. Some people were asking me before, well, who's going to beat Io? Right? If these women can't beat Io Shirai, then who the hell's going to beat Io Shirai? I got a name for you. Raquel Gonzalez. That's who. Raquel Gonzalez is the same woman who pinned the champion in the War Games match to win the match for Team Candace. It has not been mentioned. It's just this forgotten about fact. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't lead to anything. So she already has a built-in reason to challenge Io Shirai and say, hey, I think I'm deserving of a shot. I think Raquel Gonzalez should be the one and is going to be the one to dethrone Io Shirai if there is some kind of takeover show at the beginning of April around WrestleMania time. I think that's where it happens, whether or not she's the women's tag team champion or not. But because I thought that that's the bigger prize for her, I didn't think that they would put them over here in the tournament. I mean, look, they won the tournament. That doesn't mean they have to win the tag team belts. I think they probably will, but maybe they won't. But whoever they challenge, they should win the tag team titles. They should float from show to show, and they should get some real fucking teams because they don't have any really legitimate teams outside of the Riot Squad in the women's division on the main roster. Johnny Gargano against Kushida for the NXT North American Championship. This was the Johnny Gargano that made his name as Mr. Takeover. All those Takeover main events. And this is a match that would have had the crowd on its feet. If you had real fans in the audience, they would have been giving this match a standing ovation. These two went out there. This was the best match of Kushida's NXT career. Which, I know he hasn't had that many high-profile takeover matches. In fact, this might be the first really big takeover match that he's had, like big title match. knocked it out of the park. So as The Way, which is the Garganos and Austin Theory and indie wrestling, as they were coming out to make their entrance, Dexter Lumis chloroformed Austin Theory, and he kidnapped him. And Johnny Gargano sent his wife, or his wife and Indy, they went off to go find him. And so Johnny Gargano, for this match, was all by himself. His family members, they never came out, they never came back to help him. And Johnny has been booked through and through in this feud as the comedy chicken shit heel. You couldn't even say Kushida's name in front of him without him freaking out. That's how he was playing this up. He was the chicken shit heel. There is absolutely nothing tough about the way Johnny Gargano is portrayed, and that's fine. I'm entertained by this heel gimmick of his where he's afraid of wheels and he's afraid of stupid random shit. I kind of dig the whole The Way faction. I find them, mildly entertaining. So I don't really mind that so much, but keep that in mind. He had no help. He really wanted you to believe that Kushida was going to have this guy's number and Kushida was going to walk away as the champion. And I never bought into it. From the very beginning, I said, Johnny Gargano, he's going to retain the title. I never once believed that Kushida actually was going to win the championship. I don't just mean tonight, even in the weeks leading up to this match. And God knows they tried. I mean, they gave Kushida win after win after win. They protected him at all costs for months, going back to the fall. But it just never felt like the right time. Why would you take the title off Johnny Gargano right now? You know, he's been doing great work with The Way. There's so many other people he could be defending, so many other baby faces he could be defending that title against. Just didn't feel like the right time to make a title change anyway. But, you know, can I ask another question here? And I don't know if I'm the only one who really noticed this, but what is with all these kidnappings in wrestling of late? I mean, we've seen kidnappings in wrestling many, many, many times over the years. But I feel like I've seen a whole bunch of kidnappings just in the last, like, 2 months or 3 months. So we had Dexter Lumis kidnapping poor Austin Theory on this show. On Dynamite on Wednesday, we had Team Taz kidnapping Darby Allin and zipping him up in a body bag and dragging him behind a car in the parking lot. Who knows where they took him? A few weeks before that, we had FTR kidnapping Marco Stunt and duct taping his mouth shut and tying him to a chair, doing who knows what to him, giving him weird alien probes. Who knows? I don't even want to think. Too many kidnappings. Remember over the summer when I ranted on the ninjas? Too many ninjas? Every other week we had ninjas. Now it's too many kidnappings. It's always something. Too many ninjas, too many dives, too many kendo sticks, too many kidnappings. Gotta dial it back a little bit. There's too many crimes being committed. This is becoming an epidemic. So Kushida was targeting Johnny's arm. Gargano was targeting the head and neck for a while. They were trading strikes in the ring before Kushida hit his hip toss into a low drop kick combo. And he was giving curb stomps to Gargano. He went for a hammerlock suplex. Gargano escaped. Get it? Gargano escaped. So Gargano hit an enziguri, avoided one from Kushida. And Kushida locked on an ankle lock, hit a German suplex and a buzzsaw kick for a near fall. Kushida sent Gargano to the floor. And Johnny went for his slingshot suplex. Kushida, though, caught him in a DDT and hit a Northern Lights suplex bridge for a near fall. Kushida went for the hoverboard lock off the top rope. Gargano countered out of it, hit a twisting suplex and a step-up swinging DDT for a two count. This is where things were really beginning to build at this point. Kushida laid in some kicks. Gargano caught a handspring, applied the Gargano escape. Kushida had a fight. He was targeting Gargano's left arm, trying to turn it into a hoverboard lock. And Kushida applied a European clutch for a very close near fall. Gargano sent Kushida face first into the turnbuckle with a lawn dart. That looked brutal, by the way. That's what you call a compressed neck. That's what that was. So they traded elbows before Kushida hit a corner suplex. Kushida tried to lock on the cross arm breaker. Gargano tried to block it. And Kushida broke the grip, reapplied it. Gargano rolled to the ropes. Rescued by the ropes was Johnny Gargano. And Kushida applied the hoverboard lock on the floor. Gargano drove him into the barricade, though, to escape. Kept whacking him into the barricade, trying to break the hold. Kushida then is on the ramp. He goes to the far end of the ramp, like something you would see at like a New Japan show. They do that every now and then. They'll go all the way down the aisle. And then they'll build up steam and they'll run, right? They'll make a beeline back to the ring where their opponent is standing there unwittingly waiting for him. Only here, you know, in the COVID Coliseum. I mean, it's not a very long aisle way, so he didn't have that far to run. But Kushida went to the end of the ramp. And he ran down, soccer kicked Gargano's arm, locked him on a flying hoverboard lock in the ring. Gargano positioned Kushida, though. Kushida was positioned sort of as he was holding the hold. He was sort of in the ropes, and Gargano moved in such a way that I think Kushida's either his neck or his face hit the rope, and that broke the hold. One final beat DDT on the ramp and a second one in the ring. Secured the win, the clean win for Johnny Gargano. I said before, he had no help. Nobody interfered. Nobody cheated. He won the match fair and square. It was a very competitive match. As a wrestling match, it was an incredible match. Just purely from a wrestling standpoint, this was an incredible wrestling match where the heel in Johnny Gargano managed to somehow find a way to win against the man who has been unbeatable now for months. I said it earlier on the podcast. I think that the plan was to keep Kushida strong in the fall for a match with Finn Balor. And Kushida just would have been an opponent for him to beat, maybe at one of those takeover shows. But Balor got his jaw broken in two places, and they didn't know when he was going to be back. It kind of threw a monkey wrench into their plans. They didn't know what to do with Kushida. So they just kept having him win. He was racking up wins, win after win after win, until they could figure out what to do with him. And that's when he ended up slotted in this feud here for the North American title. So it actually felt kind of like a big deal that Johnny Gargano got a win over this guy, because nobody else has been able to figure him out for months. I do fear, though, for Kushida, now that he has finally lost, that might open the floodgates to a lot more losing. I just can't shake this feeling that we have seen the peak. With this match, we have seen the peak of Kushida here in NXT, certainly in WWE, because if you think Kushida is going to go to the main roster and they're going to do jack shit with him, you're a fool, okay? Don't be stupid. You know damn well that Kushida's best days are happening right now in NXT, and it doesn't give me any pleasure to say that. I'm just being honest with you. You watch the same product that I do. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me that you have high hopes for Kushida's career when and if the day comes that he gets that call that, hey, we need you on Raw, or hey, we need you on SmackDown. Give me a break. So we may have seen Kushida peak here at this point. I just don't know that I see him really getting any higher than he was here. I mean, maybe one day he will win the North American title. I don't see Kushida being the NXT champion. Sorry to say. But you know what? If he did peak, this was a hell of a way to peak. A hell of a match for him to peak with here on this TakeOver show. We had the finals of the men's Dusty Classic for the right to challenge for the NXT Tag Team Championship. It was MSK taking on grizzled young veterans. Fucking tag team wrestling, men. When it's done right, it's great, ain't it? Isn't it great? When tag team wrestling is done right, I love it. It's a beautiful thing. Another excellent match. They were, three for three, I think, at this point in the night. Previous Dusty Cup winners, for those of you who may have forgotten. Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. Remember him? Samoa Joe, that guy that used to wrestle. The Authors of Pain. Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. Aleister Black and Ricochet. A moment of silence. There you go. And the Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne. So those were your previous Dusty Cup winners. GYV, they were isolating Nash Carter. or Zach Wentz. Still thinking about them in their old names, right? Desmond Xavier, Zach Wentz, the Rascals. So they were isolating Carter for a while. Carter ducked a lariat from Zach Gibson, got the hot tag to Wes Lee. Lee cleaned house, hit Gibson with a punch combo and a drop kick, and Lee hit both opponents with a... He was on the ring post and hit this beautiful tope con hilo. Lee hit Gibson with an Eddie Gordo waterfall kick for a two count. I had to look up the name of them. I didn't even know some of these moves that they were doing here. I said, I got to look up what these moves are. The action here was fast and furious. So they were busting out things that even I didn't know how to call. Carter tagged in. Lee catapulted Drake into Carter's super kick. Carter started angrily slapping himself. He was smacking himself. He was beating himself. And he hit Gibson with a springboard twisting cutter for a near fall. Gibson recovered after Lee tagged in. Lee took a throat punch from Gibson. Came back with an enziguri. James Drake tagged in. Hit Lee with a 450 for a near fall. He couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that he kicked out. Lee reversed the doomsday device into a roll-up. Drake broke up the pin on Gibson. And Lee shoved Drake into Gibson. Lee shoved Carter onto Gibson with the hot fire flame. Carter hit Drake with a moonsault. And Lee hit Drake with a spiral tap for a two count. So here was, in my opinion, now we had a lot of action in this match, but to me this was the highlight. This was the spot that made me go, oh shit, as I watched it. So Gibson drags Wes Lee to ringside, puts him up on his shoulders in an electric chair position. James Drake then hits Lee coming through the ropes with a diving doomsday device. He clotheslined this guy's head clean off his shoulders. Wes Lee did a complete rotation, turned this fucker inside out, and he landed on the ground. I would say totally safe, but really that move is never really safe. A lot of things can go wrong on the landing on that move. It looks dangerous, but these guys know what they're doing. It looked fucking great. It was an incredible spot. I'm sure all of the virtual fans at home gave it a big pop. But that was the one spot in this match of all the back and forth here that made me go, wow. And it made my eyes bug open a little bit. So we fast forward here to the finish. Lee recovers eventually. And he's helping Carter escape a ticket to mayhem, because they're about to try to finish him off. He rescues his partner. Carter holds Drake in place while Lee connects with a doomsday flipping neckbreaker to win the Dusty Cup. This was great action from bell to bell. Two very good teams. I know that's kind of an understatement. Grizzled Young Veterans, excellent team. And I like the fact that they're a team. That's the key word. They're not a makeshift team of two guys that in the last 6 months were put together. They were put together, but they've been a team now for a very long time. And they've formed a great chemistry together. Their matches, you can say what you want to about their personalities, their promos. I can't say they really do a lot for me. They don't really get me overly excited, but when I watch their matches, they're excellent. Now we know MSK is excellent. You take these two teams and put them together and you get what we got here tonight. This was an appropriate end to this tournament. This is the way you end the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. MSK has just had a rocket strapped to them since day one. They haven't been around for very long. They've only been on the TV now for, a couple of months? And they went right to the finals of the tournament. They won, and that earns them now in their back pocket. They have an NXT Tag Team title opportunity against Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. So they are next in line to challenge for the NXT Tag Team Championship. I have to say, and this is nothing new. This has been going on in WWE for years. But I noticed it on this show, and it just drove me nuts. When the match was over, Desmond Xavier, Wes Lee, whatever you want to call him, he got very emotional, like he was crying, and his partner came over, and it was a very emotional moment for them, because I'm sure it legitimately was, because here they are. They probably are trying to soak it all in. Oh, my God, look where we are. We made it. We made it to WWE. We just won this big tournament. This is unbelievable. It's a lot of success for them in a very short period of time. On camera, as these guys are, you know, emotional and they're trying to celebrate in their own way, you see Drake Wirtz, yes, the controversial Drake Wirtz referee in the background. And he is leaning in and clearly, look, I'm sure he's getting instructions in his earpiece from the back on what to, you know, relay to the guys. But this guy is just harassing them, telling them, I'm sure, like, you know, you got to get up, you got to pose, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I'm just like, I'm watching this and I'm like, fuck, leave them alone. It's like that guy years ago, leave Britney alone, like, leave them alone. Let them soak in the moment. Why are you trying? And again, I know he's only doing what he's told, but stop telling the referees. It's like they micromanage every little thing, every movement, every pose. And I see it all the time, but I don't comment on it all the time. It just, for whatever reason, here in this moment, it just fucking annoyed me. The way they constantly, every little thing, this is how you have to react. Stand here, do this, do that. I mean, do they wipe their asses for them at the performance center? Do they help them do that too? It's annoying. What do you think? I have some little troll guy off to the side here, that off camera that you can't see, telling me when to move and what to do here on the stream? He could be talking to me right now. He's standing right over here. He's telling me to pick up my mug. That's what I'll do. Is that good? We're cool? Okay. See? You see how fucking annoying that is? I micromanage every little movement. Let's get to something that I fucking loved. We had a video package. We had a video package on this show for the newly rich Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes! He has been out with an injury. He had some minor knee surgery, I believe, a few weeks ago or several weeks ago. So they had done an injury angle on TV with him and took him out of the picture for a while until he was ready to come back. And if you missed the NXT show on Wednesday night, they explained when he showed up, when he made his big return. He showed up, I think, what was it, a Lamborghini? What was he driving around? Some fancy sports car. He was throwing around dollar bills like it was nothing, talking about how he bought into GameStop, and boy, did he hit it big. He's just a country bumpkin. Probably, he doesn't know what he's doing, but he heard about, he loves games. In his time off, he learned about video games and how much fun they can be. And then he learned about this place called GameStop, which apparently was all the rage recently, and now he's a multimillionaire. He is rich. So they aired basically, it was a music video. That's what it was. They aired a music video for Cameron Grimes. I don't know if this was a song that they had made for them or if this is a legitimate rap song. If it is, I'd love to know the name of it so somebody in the chat clue me in, because I couldn't figure out what song it was, but I was getting into it. We had a Cameron Grimes rap video with him. He was tossing around dollar bills, $100 bills. He was running around in his underwear. I guess he was at his home. He had a pool in the backyard. He had on just a bathing suit and a top hat. Big smile, big cheesy smile on his face. Throwing money around. Making snow angels with all of his cash. He was even burning some of it. He was burning some of the money. He was burning some of the dollar bills. And I got to show you this. I may as well show you here. This is what it's all about right here. This is a man who is living the life. If you missed it, this is all you need to know about this. This is a man, I aspire to be this man one day. When you don't have a fucking care in the world, you've got more money than you know what to do with, and you just lounge out by the pool. That right there is what life is all about. That right there is Cameron Grimes, one of my favorite acts on all of NXT. It's amazing the turnaround that I have had, because I really didn't give a shit about Cameron Grimes for the longest time. I said, okay, he's a good wrestler, but wasn't really much more to him than that. But I have turned the corner on this guy in the last 6 months or so. He has become one of my favorite acts on NXT. To the moon. What's he saying? Kiss My Grits. That might have been the name of the song, actually. Kiss My Grits. I love it. We get to the triple threat match for the NXT Women's Championship. So I look at this list of super chats here I'm going to dive into in just a second. So if you've got questions or comments about tonight's show, or really anything else for that matter, send them on in. And I'll shout you out as I go through the list here in a little bit. We had a triple threat match for the NXT Women's Championship. Io Shirai defending against Toni Storm and Mercedes Martinez. The veteran Mercedes Martinez, 20 years in the industry now. Smartest lady in all of WWE. Brought her in as part of Retribution, and she said, no, I don't think so. Send me back home. She's like E.T., fucking E.T. That was Mercedes Martinez. She wanted to go back home. And here she was, competing for the NXT Women's Championship. This woman made the right choice. See, in life, you make good life choices and you make bad life choices. In the case of Mercedes Martinez, a choice was made for her that she disagreed with, and she said, I'm making the choice to go back to NXT. And they allowed her to do so, and she is much better off for it. I'm happy for her. Unfortunately for her, though, she did not win the NXT Women's Championship. But this was another very good match. It felt very short, especially relative to all the matches that came before it. That was the one thing about it. The work was good, not as smooth as the earlier matches. I thought it was still very good. I wouldn't call it a great match or, you know, an excellent match or anything like that. But it also felt like it had maybe 5 to 7 minutes chopped off. Maybe they got their time cut. I don't know. But it did feel like a bit of an abrupt finish. So we had Storm and Shirai. They were fighting up top, up on the top rope. Martinez pushed Io to the floor, and she hit a top rope German suplex to Toni Storm. Dropped her right on the back of her head. So that looked like a wicked landing for her. But in doing so, poor Mercedes Martinez was stuck in the Tree of Woe. And Io Shirai then climbed up to the top rope, ended up giving her the old Alberto Del Dipshit double stomp down in the corner. Martinez and Shirai, they fought out onto the floor. Martinez sent Io into the barricade with a Death Valley driver. We had a Botchamania moment, not her fault, but a Botchamania moment nonetheless, as Toni Storm started clearing off the debris and the iPads, whatever shit they have on the announce desk. So she wasn't on the desk. Nobody was standing on the announce desk. Nobody else was even near the announce desk. The announcers were kind of slowly backing away. All Toni Storm was doing was just trying to clear the debris and stuff off the top. All of a sudden, the table apparently had a heart attack and died because the table just collapsed on its own. It just collapsed. It just imploded. So whatever she was going to do, I think what she was going to do is either go for or tease a Tiger Driver, her finish, or the Storm Driver. Why did I forget the name all of a sudden? But she was going to go for her move, I think, on the table. Maybe she was going to get backdropped onto the table. Well, she couldn't do that now. So she had to improvise. She went for Storm Zero. That's what it was. She went for Storm Zero. Martinez countered with a DDT instead. So as both women are now recovering and getting up to their feet, Io Shirai, who from past matches that we've seen, War Games and such, we know that she has a tendency to climb onto very high platforms. She's climbing one of these lighting beams. She's, you know, she's scaling the scaffolding or whatever. There's like a column or a beam that's nearby. And she dives off with a crossbody, takes down both ladies. Mercedes Martinez sends Io into the steel steps a minute later, brings Toni Storm back into the ring. Martinez lays in the knee strikes on Storm, goes for a fisherman buster for a two count. Storm fights out of a fireman's carry, hits a headbutt before hitting Storm Zero, only for a near fall. Storm comes off the top rope with a diving headbutt to the midsection, and Io Shirai, who had been out of the picture for a few minutes, out of nowhere, as Toni Storm is trying to win this match, Io Shirai hits the Genius of the Sky moonsault. That takes Toni Storm out of the equation, and she pins Mercedes Martinez to retain the championship in about 12 minutes, about 12 or 13 minutes. When I call this the weakest match on the show, which I thought it was, this was the weakest match on the entire card, it's less a knock on the match. It's almost not even fair. It's less of a knock on the match itself and really more of a compliment, I think, to how freaking great I thought every other match on this card was. But this one would be at the bottom of the list. And it was still very good. But it was the weakest match on the show. But it was the correct outcome. For the reasons that I talked about earlier. I think the woman who stops Io Shirai dead in her tracks and takes the championship from her is Raquel Gonzalez. And I think the time to do it probably would be the next TakeOver show, which might be in April around WrestleMania time. I don't know when the next TakeOver is going to be. But you kind of look at the roster, as stacked as the women's division is on NXT, and you say, well, who could beat this woman? Who's going to be the one to finally take the title from her? And to me, the name I keep coming back to is Raquel Gonzalez. You know, what Rhea Ripley was to that show before, I think, is the role now that Raquel Gonzalez steps into. So the correct outcome here was to keep the title on Io. And if she's going to drop it to somebody, it should be one-on-one. It should be a very big deal when somebody finally beats her and takes the championship. Whoever that person is, you got to put that person over strong. And I think that person should be Raquel Gonzalez. And we had Finn Balor defending his NXT championship in the main event against Pete Dunne. I have been looking forward to this match for a very long time. I thought they might do the match as early as the New Year's Evil show at the beginning of the year. I'm glad they waited a little bit longer. And they did not disappoint. Early on, they were feeling each other out. Chain wrestling. Dunne took advantage, went to work doing what he does best, which is torture his opponent. So he's bending Balor's arms back and he's bending his fingers back. All the joint manipulation they love talking about. Balor turns things around, works over Dunne's left knee. Dunne with stomps to the face and a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. So we had a snap German by Dunne. And as Finn Balor is on all fours, got his hands down right after the move, he's trying to recover, he stomps, just jumps up in the air and stomps on both of his hands. Balor recovers, he fights back with a backstabber. Shotgun dropkick, right? Was it the John Woo dropkick in the corner? Dunne is down. Balor heads up top. Dunne counters with the... So Balor comes off with the coup de grace. Dunne counters it by catching him in a... I think it was a triangle. On the way down, he catches him. And Balor is able to get his foot on the bottom rope. But by the time he gets his foot on the bottom rope, he has passed out. So if he would have passed out a split second earlier, we would have had a new champion. But he got his foot on the rope, so that's a rope break. And Pete Dunne tries to follow up very quickly. The referee backs him off to check on Balor, make sure he's okay. And Balor says he can continue, I'm okay. Balor counters the bitter end attempt into an abdominal stretch, takes him down to the mat. Still has the stretch applied, but he's got him down on the mat. And Pete Dunne breaks the hold by snapping the fingers. That's his go-to spot. I'll tell you what, though, when he does it, it looks good. Visually, it looks like a painful spot. So he does it very well. He hits the bitter end, and I knew, even after hitting the bitter end, which is his big finish, I knew that Pete Dunne was not winning the NXT Championship. And do you know why? Do you know why I knew that he wasn't winning the NXT Championship? Because the announcers told me so. And how did they do that? Because they told me that we're going to have a new champion. And I know that in WWE speak, when the announcers tell you before the pin that we're going to have a new champion, we're not going to have a new fucking champion. So thank you, Wade Barrett, and thank you, Vic Joseph. Oh! You notice that when Vic Joseph does commentary? He moans. He's not even a bad announcer, but he's got to tone that down a little bit. I picked up on this a while ago, and it's all I notice now when I hear his commentary every week. Anytime somebody does a move, oh, she's coming off the rope. She's going to do, oh, oh. That's Vic Joseph. He's a moaner. So anyway, that gave it away. They telegraphed it. Of course, he kicked out. Balor then rips the mouth guard. He pulls the mouthpiece out of Pete Dunne's mouth. And then he delivers a drop kick, double drop kick, right to the face, followed up by the coup de grace. He got all of it, but he wasn't done yet. He didn't go for the pin. Hits the coup de grace. Instead, he goes and hits the 1916, then goes for the pin. And Finn Balor retains the NXT Championship. Finn Balor's reign of terror. I don't mean that in a bad way, like the Triple H one. Finn Balor's reign of terror as the NXT champion continues. This was a fucking battle. Balor couldn't even move his fingers when this match was over. He had his hands down, couldn't even move his fingers. His fingers were all broken up, apparently. Beth Phoenix made the comment, said that he basically had hooks for hands, which is true. It's kind of what it was like. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch come out to attack Balor when Balor is in the aisleway. And they bring him back into the ring, and Pete Dunne joins in the assault. It's 3-on-1, so you know somebody is coming out to make the save. They're beating Balor down and beating on him and beating on him, and Undisputed Era runs out to make the save. Still no Bobby Fish. I think if you add up all of the days in NXT that Bobby Fish, I'm assuming it's an injury. Maybe not. Maybe there's something personal going on in his life. But let's assume it's an injury because he seems to always be hurt. If you add up all the days on the NXT roster for Bobby Fish that he wasn't injured, I would think the days that he was would just dwarf all of the days that he actually was healthy and able to compete. This guy can't catch a fucking break. And apparently he can't stay healthy. So I don't know where he is, but Adam Cole runs out, Roderick Strong runs out, Kyle O'Reilly runs out, and they run off the heels. And I thought the way that Kyle O'Reilly was acting, I thought he was just going to haul off and just all three guys were going to start beating down Finn Balor. But Kyle helped him out, and he helped him up, and he's talking about how he respects him, and you know he's being very complimentary of him, and they're all posing together. Like he's the fourth member of Undisputed Era. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting to see. Something's going to happen. But I really thought it was going to be Kyle who was going to go heel and attack Balor. But instead, and they pulled the copyright stuff, which is an NXT staple, right? You got to put the copyright logo on the screen, get people to think that the show is about to end, and then you lower the boom. Well, this was one of those moments. Adam Cole super kicks Finn Balor. He caught him flush in the face, too. I mean, that was a hell of a super kick. That was a hell of a thigh slap. Super kicked him right in the face, knocked him out. Kyle O'Reilly is very upset. He was not expecting this. He did not want that. What are you doing? He trusted us. He can't believe. Even Roddy seems surprised. It's like Adam Cole went into business for himself, and he took out Finn Balor. And as O'Reilly is complaining, Cole hauls off and he super kicks Kyle. So he super kicks Kyle, I assume, right out of Undisputed Era. So Adam Cole has now super kicked Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly, and he goes to leave and he's telling Roddy to come with him. Roderick Strong is conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. And there it is, the breakup, or the beginning of the breakup anyway, of the Undisputed Era. It may as well be a breakup. Bobby Fish is fucking never around. Kyle O'Reilly just got kicked in the face. Roddy doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know where he is or what his name is. And Adam Cole is back in the role that suits him the best. Babyface Adam Cole, it was overdue. I think I was even arguing. It's about time we get a little bit of a babyface run out of him. And you know what? He's pretty much been a babyface since the summer. But he's also, outside of the Pat McAfee stuff, they don't really seem to know what to do with him. Adam Cole is best as a heel. So turning him back heel again is fine with me, because I think that's the correct role for him to be in. Kyle O'Reilly stays a babyface. Roddy could go either way. We don't know where his allegiance is going to lie. We don't know what you know his attitude about the whole thing is going to end up being. But now they can start to build to an Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly match. And you look at this next TakeOver show and how it seems to be taking shape. The next challenger for the championship has to be Karrion Kross. That has to be what they're building to. Karrion Kross is going to be wrestling Santos Escobar this week on TV. So he's going to be wrestling him at least once. Maybe they'll get a rematch out of it. But Karrion Kross should be next in line to challenge Finn Balor for the title, I would assume, at the next TakeOver show. So let's say that's your title match. Let's say they actually do go with Io Shirai against Raquel Gonzalez for the women's title. That's a big match they can do. Adam Cole one-on-one with Kyle O'Reilly on the undercard. Things now were set up perfectly for it. You know, Johnny Gargano, who does he defend the North American title against? Maybe Dexter Lumis? You've got a few options. They can push Bronson Reed. But it seems like Dexter Lumis is probably still in that picture where they're going to want to build him. He's kidnapped one of his children, so obviously it's going to go somewhere. And things are really starting to take shape all of a sudden for this next TakeOver show. And if they want to wait, you can do MSK against Lorcan and Birch. So things seem to be, you know, building up pretty nicely, I think, for that next TakeOver show. But the other thing you can also do, and we don't know because their plans, they haven't even figured out what they want to do yet. There's been a lot of talk about maybe doing an NXT championship match on one of the two nights of WrestleMania this year. So it's also possible that they do Balor and Karrion Kross at Raymond James Stadium on one of the nights of WrestleMania this year. When they do their next takeover, there will be an NXT title defense. So whatever that title defense looks like, that next card is shaping up very nicely. Here's what you guys thought of the pay-per-view tonight. Overwhelmingly, look at this, overwhelmingly positive response, 88% thumbs up, only 11% thumbs down for this show here tonight. I don't really know how you can give the show a thumbs down, but look, everybody has their opinion of what they think and what they're looking for. I think that's a little strange, but perhaps some of those people will let me know. I mean, I'm going to start reading super chats here in a second. Again, hit that sub button if you're not subbed. I do appreciate that. Hit the like button and I'm going to read your super chat. So if you have a question or a comment about the show tonight, if you're one of the people who didn't like the show tonight, I'd love to know why. What was it about the show that made you give it a thumbs down? Let me know. I gotta, for the people who are joining a little late, we had some new people tune in. I have to put this back up. That's all I need to say. If you missed TakeOver tonight, look at what you missed here. Soak it all in. Soak in rich Cameron Grimes. That's what you missed out on. That is what you missed out on here on the show tonight. So let's track back and go through all of your questions and comments. Now, remember, there was news that broke, and I talked about it at the beginning of the stream in terms of new signings. Two former Impact champions have officially signed with NXT. One of them debuted on the show tonight and has signed a contract. The other one is a former Impact Knockouts champion, Taya Valkyrie. Eli Drake being the other one, now going by the name LA Knight. It is what it is. I'm old enough to remember the days of Eli Cottonwood and Percy Watson and some of the other god-awful names they gave people, or that people came up with for themselves, you know. Sometimes wrestlers come up and they have ideas that are just as stupid, if not worse, than what the company gives them. Some of them aren't too bright either. They're not overly creative people all the time. Some of them are, some of them aren't. So as much as we give the company shit and we give the company grief for some of their dumb decisions, you know what? You got to give it to the talent as well. Because sometimes they come up with some of these names. Look at that. I couldn't even time that any better. There's our boy right there, Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes Super Chat. I love it. I love it. Donzel Hawkins. Wonder what Vince is thinking for WrestleMania. You could just chop off the end of that Super Chat and just ask, wonder what Vince is thinking, and put a question mark there. And I couldn't tell you. I don't think anybody knows what Vince is thinking. I'm not sure sometimes that Vince knows what Vince is thinking. Ryan Spies, the ending angle was exactly what NXT needed to really get some interest back in the product, in my opinion. Well, I'd like for that to be the case, but again, I just think as soon as Wednesday rolls around and people come down from that TakeOver high, I think unless they really have something to hook you in there, and they might, right? People, I think, are going to want to know the fallout to the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly stuff. That was a nice little cliffhanger there at the end of the show. You know, we'll see. We'll see if that can hook people in and get them, you know, interested enough in seeing what comes next. But they've got to try some new things, really, and just try to, you know, just get some renewed interest in that show on Wednesdays. I mean, you look at the ratings on Wednesdays. They're dying to death. They gotta get something going. Marquand 1976, can't wait to hear your thoughts on LA Knight, a.k.a. Eli Drake. Well, I just gave it to you. Rizzo, thank you for the $5. Great show by NXT. Between the ending, Eli Drake, I mean LA Knight, I think this was the shot in the arm that they needed. Javier, thank you for the 69 cents. Haha. Brian Becerra with the $12. Enjoyed the two Dusty Rhodes tag team finals and matches. And Gargano against Kushida. Great show overall. Andy M, shout out from Montana. Thank you, Andy M. I wonder if it's colder in Montana or if it's colder here in New York. I'm assuming it's colder where you are. John Falchetta. With the $5, Dusty got his big break teaming with Murdoch, and he booked Team Strong on top. He pushed tag team wrestling. It was a great show. Well, that is true. He did break in tag team. In fact, I think Ric Flair, when he first got into the business, not only did he want to, I think, portray, what was it, like a cousin or some kind of relative? Like he wanted to be Randy Rhodes or something like that, but I think he wanted to team with Dusty as well. But I'm just saying, you know, for as big of a star as Dusty went on to become, it's not as if he was always synonymous with tag team wrestling. You know, he did some, the big angle with the Road Warriors and stuff like that that you can point to, but I don't know. I don't think most people look at Dusty Rhodes as being some kind of big tag team specialist. Rizzo, two things work against NXT in my opinion. One, NXT is on the network the very next night, so you don't have to watch it live. Also, NXT is viewed as developmental. Well, then that's a problem that WWE has to address because Triple H has constantly said that we are no longer a developmental brand. They look at them as the third brand. So if what you say is true and you continue to look at NXT as developmental only, then that's a failing on WWE's part because WWE don't think so. WWE looks at NXT as the third brand. Once they hit USA Network, they were the third brand. They're no longer just developmental. The Murder Hog, best women's division in wrestling, period. I agree wholeheartedly. Andy M, with his second shout-out from Montana. I'm loving the love from Montana. Ken terminated by DQ. What is going on, Ken? Did you mention the fact that Bobby Fish is yet to return? Yes, I did. See, you jumped the gun. You have to have a little more faith in me. You have to have a little more trust in the Sala Monster. You knew I was going to bring it up at some point. I brought it up a few minutes ago. It says, by the way, I am not feeling Eli Drake's WWE name. Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way. Rizzo, I apologize for blowing up the chat, but you saying Melina made me remember about the rumor saying that she was back in WWE. Is that happening? The belief is that it is. But we have not heard anything about it since. I mean, look, we heard the same thing about Eva Marie. And she has yet to debut, but the belief is that she is signed. And it's just a matter of when they're ready to bring her back to TV. So perhaps it's the same thing with Melina. They're just waiting for the right moment to bring her back. That's a little weird, though, isn't it? Now that I think about it. So you remember the past relationship with Melina and John Morrison. And I don't know what the status of it is now, if they're on okay terms or if there's still some lingering feelings there, you know, bad feelings or whatever. I don't know. But Melina could very well be coming into WWE. And now WWE has signed John Morrison's wife. I smell a storyline. If I were John Morrison, I would stay far away from that storyline. But if I'm Vince McMahon, that's good shit, pal. This is the same Vince McMahon, though, who once floated the idea in a creative meeting of him being revealed as the person who sired his daughter's baby. And when that idea got shot down, his other suggestion was, well, what about Shane? And I could just picture Shane. He was probably already gone. Like, you know, like in the cartoons, when someone goes and takes off, you see like a dust cloud behind them. I can just picture as soon as Shane hears that idea, he gets the fuck out of there. He doesn't want to have anything to do with that. Professor John Gotti, again, my friend, you are the king tonight of the Super Chat. I mean, we're not done yet, but I don't think anybody's topping that. Thank you. Thank you for the $300. That is amazing. Another excellent takeover, he says, the dissension of the Undisputed Era, Undisputed No More. That is true. Let's see who's next. TH Revolution with the 10 bucks. Thank you, sir. Adam Cole turning heel on Kyle tonight has me the most excited that I have been for NXT in a very long time. Do you think Strong is going to side with one of the two, or is this going to be a three-way feud? I almost think it would just be better at this point to just make it a three-way feud. Although you got to do one-on-one, Cole and O'Reilly. But I think it's probably time, you know, that these guys branch out on their own and just start doing their own thing once this program has run its course. That's probably what I would do. Dry chicken without flavor. Taya Valkyrie going to WWE was inevitable. Random human. Thank you for the $5. My unpopular opinion is that I hate really long matches. Also, there needs to be more triple threat matches, especially involving a ladder, and less tag team matches. Jacob Barnes with the 10. With Adam Cole turning on Kyle O'Reilly, do you think the rest of the UE will turn on Kyle as well, or do you think it will be Cole and Roddy against Kyle and Bobby Fish? Well, I don't know what Bobby Fish's status is. So, yeah, if Bobby Fish comes back, then I guess you can kind of have one guy on one side, one guy on the other. You could do some tag matches. I'm just assuming that Bobby Fish may not be back for a little while, and you can't really count on him, so maybe everybody ends up just going their separate ways. Which, if they do, I think that's terrible for Bobby Fish. Kyle O'Reilly, I think, could go on to be successful at a mid-level as a single on the main roster. In NXT, you know, one day I could see him potentially being NXT champion. On the main roster, there's no way. I could see him at an intercontinental level. Bobby Fish has no chance whatsoever. If Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly break up or go their separate ways, Bobby Fish is done. I mean, yeah, he may linger and stick around, and then, you know, in a few years, they'll make him a coach or something at the PC. There's no way Bobby Fish is getting any kind of push of significance as a singles. I just don't see it. So he better be hoping that Undisputed Era does not break apart. Dried Chicken, Deonna Purrazzo and Tay Conti, WWE's loss. And Impact Wrestling and AEW's gain. Paul Heyman with the $5. If Tony Khan and Tony Storm got married, would they both be Tony Khan? Thank you, Paul Heyman. Caught in my zipper. Send $5 in. Soon we'll have ninja kidnappings. Well, now that you said that, we're going to have ninja kidnappings where they hold off their assailants with kendo sticks. They don't carry guns or knives. They just carry kendo sticks everywhere they are. And to get away, to make their big getaway, they dive. Just roll them all up together. All the things that I can't stand. Naif Al-Safar, thank you, sir, for the $15. I shouted Naif out on the podcast earlier today, episode 691, 2.5 hours. It dropped earlier this afternoon. I covered a ton of other stuff. I talked about the Tom Cole story, the tragedy of the whole Tom Cole thing. He took his own life, according to his brother. That's the one of the WWE ring boys from the whole ring boy scandals of the early 90s. And I talked about a lot of those details on the podcast earlier. It's just a really sick, sad story, what happened to him. So anyway, go back and check out that episode from earlier. When you're done here, or tomorrow, you got the day off of President's Day, you're hanging around, or maybe you're going somewhere, right, on your commute, check out episode 691. And when you're done, shoot me a tweet, at Solomonster, and let me know what you thought. I love hearing from you guys. Sitting on my bed. With the $5, the table busted when Tony touched it. Can't blame the table. Oh, boy. Sean Waters with the $20. Since WrestleMania is a two-night event, probably guessing no takeover during that weekend. Oh, I'm not saying that there's a takeover that weekend. They can't do it that weekend because you got two nights. And I don't think NXT wants to piggyback off of any pay-per-view. What I'm saying is the next takeover may not be until early April. It could be late April, like around WrestleMania time. I wasn't suggesting that it was going to be that weekend. No, that's not going to happen. They're not doing that anymore. Any pay-per-view weekends, like we have Elimination Chamber next Sunday, there's a reason why they did TakeOver now and not next Saturday. The old way of doing it, you would have had TakeOver on the 20th and Elimination Chamber on the 21st. They don't do that anymore. Do you think we'll see some NXT matches at WrestleMania, like an NXT title match or any of the Dusty Cup stuff? I don't know about Dusty Cup. I think there's a pretty good chance we'll get an NXT title defense. I don't know. I don't think we're going to get anything beyond that. If anything, I think it would be a Balor defense. Sean D. Cameron Grimes is the best. Oh, yes. Yes, he is. Domination Warrior, thank you for the $5. Takeovers are like those restaurant quality specials you get every month and a half. Cameron Grimes, howdy ho. What was the best NXT theme song? 2010 is his question. Oh, I don't know what years were attached to it. I'm still a fan of the original NXT song from the weekly show when it launched in, let's see. The TakeOver special started in 2014. So they were still using it, I think, around that time. It was an instrumental theme. I think it was it the Roar of the Crowd? Is that the one or the one that... It was either the Roar of the Crowd one or the one before that. That might still be my favorite. Sean D., will there be a UE Civil War? Oh, yeah, it's underway. It's already happening. The first shot got fired tonight at the end of the show. Dry Chicken, Undisputed Era breaking up in NXT is the right call. That faction would not last long on the main roster. They would be dead in a heartbeat. And I'm sorry to say, and I know we have a lot of Adam Cole fans, and I like Adam Cole. I think he's very, he's a talented guy and well-spoken. He's going to be a great ambassador and a great spokesperson for the company when they start putting him out there more often. But whether it's Adam Cole, whether it's Roderick Strong, right, great wrestlers, these guys are dead to rights the moment they hit the main roster. And it kills me to say it, but Adam Cole's size is going to do him in. It'd be the times that we've seen him on TV, he's been in a Royal Rumble. He made a cameo once, I think, in the Royal Rumble and stuff. It is noticeable. His size or lack of size is noticeable. Even if it doesn't bother me that much, I guarantee you it is going to affect the way that certain people behind the scenes up there view him, and it's going to work against him. So, I don't know how you remedy that other than just going out there and having great matches and hoping that when you get fans back in the building that they rally behind you the way they rallied behind Daniel Bryan. That might be about the only way that we'll see somebody like Adam Cole go on to bigger and better things. Because the more time that goes by and the more I kind of look at his situation and the predicament that he's in right now, I'm sure they think the world of him. The question is, do you really see Adam Cole, when he gets called up to Raw or SmackDown, do you see him thriving and eventually becoming a Universal Champion or a WWE Champion? Honestly, it's very difficult for me to see. It's hard for me to see. And their track record with the NXT talent is bad enough as it is. Even with people who were bigger, physically bigger than Adam Cole. So I don't have a lot of high hopes for what his future holds. Paul Heyman, should WWE pick up Ethan Page? You know what? And I think Ethan Page is as deserving of a look as anybody else, but at some point, you got to stop stockpiling talent. WWE has more talent than they know what to do with. And if you're somebody who works in that performance center, who you've been waiting and waiting and waiting for an opportunity, and you see them just signing all of these guys from these other promotions and bringing them in and putting them on TV right away, how does that make you feel? You're not doing live events right now. So you can't even do those local Florida shows where you make the loops and you try to, you know, just get ring time in and improve and get better. They're not even doing that right now because of COVID. So you got a lot of people stuck in that PC. They show up, they train, they have classes, they roll around the ring, but they're not really doing much else. So now they're bringing in Eli Drake and they're bringing in Taya Valkyrie and they just signed this other person, Blake Christian, I believe his name is. They're signing all of this great independent talent or talent from other companies, but they don't even know what to do with the talent they already have. So it's not a knock on Ethan Page, but I think, you know, unless you get like a really big, big name, I don't want to say hiring freeze, but I would almost say, why don't you try to figure out what to do with the fucking people you already have working for you before you start bringing in more from the outside? Abdul Rahman is Baron Corbin, the biggest PC graduate. Probably not. I guess Alexa Bliss would be, right? I think someone like Alexa Bliss or maybe Bray Wyatt. I don't think Bray worked indies. Did he work indies? I don't think he did before he came to WWE. I don't think it's Baron Corbin. I'm going to say probably not. And dry chicken without flavor. Cameron Grimes just needs a title belt to recreate the Shawn Michaels pose. Are you talking about the Playgirl pose? Is that your favorite photo? Dry chicken without flavor? Cameron Grimes is doing just fine. He doesn't need to start imitating anybody. He just needs to keep doing what he's doing. It's all anybody asks. So I think we're all caught up now with your super chats. Again, thank you guys for all of the support, all of the love tonight, all the questions. I love it. Tamara in the chat says, this is why Will Hobbs did not sign there. He knew he would just sit in catering. Yeah, I mean, Will Hobbs was more upset if you listen to his interview on the AEW Unrestricted podcast or watch it. It's up on their YouTube channel. He was more pissed about the fact that WWE just didn't have any interest in him at all until he had a tryout with AEW. And all of a sudden, WWE gave him a call and said, hey, we're interested. And I don't know if he actually said this to them, but in his mind, he was like, fuck off. Because he knew they didn't want him because they thought, oh, he's such a great talent. They just wanted to take him away from AEW. And I tell you what, when it comes to somebody like an Eli Drake or a Taya Valkyrie, look, they could get signed on their own merits. They have their own talents. I'm not saying they don't. But I guarantee you a big part of why they're snatching up these people and bringing people back and stuff, at least part of it has to do with keeping them away from other promotions. And one of those promotions is AEW. They just want to stockpile everybody so they can own everybody and they can have everybody under contract. And when they need a warm body, they can just trot them out for whatever their needs are. It's like a manufacturing facility. Just keep churning these people out whenever they're needed. It's really all they're interested in. Valentine's Day, he says. Dry Chicken says, it's Valentine's Day, Solo Monster. I'm aware. That's how I opened the stream tonight, by telling everybody that it's Valentine's Day. Professor John Gotti, though, he's my only Valentine for the night after that super chat. I can't welcome in anybody else. Yeah, Tamara says that's exactly what it was. He knew the interest was only there to keep him from going to AEW. And it really angered him, too. It really made him very upset because he said, if you're interested in me, I want to know that you actually think I have value and that I can contribute to your team and to your show in some way. I don't want to just get a contract or a paycheck because you want to keep me away from somebody else, but you don't really see any value in me. Now, these guys are still relatively young in some cases, mid to late 20s, early 30s. You got to ask the question before you sign the contract. Do you want to waste away some of your best years by just being a bench warmer and sitting in the background? You know, some people just want to make money and support their families or buy a house and stuff. It's all the goals that you and I probably have, right? You want to be successful. You want to own your own home. We all have hopes and goals and dreams in life. I don't begrudge these people for it. If that's what is most important to them, then hey, get the money. Get the money while you can, because you're only one injury away from not making any money at all. But some of these people are very talented and would do very well somewhere else. They might even drive their value up even higher. But I fear they sign these contracts and then they just sort of stall out and they don't really grow anymore. Or they're not given the chance to really grow anymore the way they would if they were still independent or if they were working somewhere else. And we've seen a number of careers flame out or stall for those reasons. Case in point, your Dusty Cup winners from a couple of years ago, Aleister Black and Ricochet. Look at what the fuck happened to those two guys. Do you remember their last night in NXT when they lost to the Viking Raiders in Brooklyn? I do, because I was at that show. It was an incredible match. And they got an incredible send-off when the match was over. They got a standing ovation from the crowd. Ricochet was in tears. And I joked, but it was only half joking. Yeah, he was in tears. He was in tears. He was like, please don't send me to the main roster. Because he had to know what was coming. They were never the same after that. Neither one of those guys. You know, last year, Aleister Black became Pirate Pete, walking around with an eye patch on. And now we haven't even seen him in how many months? Mid-October, I think, was the last time we saw him on TV. It's mid-February now. I hear these rumors. Oh, they got big plans for Aleister Black. They're holding him out. Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I see it. One of the most disgraceful wastes of talent. Not even putting the guy on TV. Rick, have you ever thought about training to become a wrestler just for fun? Well, I mean, maybe 15 years ago, not now. I'm a little too old for that now. Where is Zelina Vega going to end up? Depends if she wants to still be in wrestling or not. I assume she does. It wasn't her choice to leave WWE. AJ Lee, it was her choice to leave. AJ Lee left, she never turned back. Some people leave and they're content to just leave and not come back and just do something else with their lives. Maybe she's content to be a full-time streamer on Twitch. If I had to venture a guess, I think she'll show up on AEW television. That would be my guess. Dry chicken without flavor, if only YouTube. Hold on, let me bring it up so everybody can see it. If only YouTube allowed you to play Mark Henry's theme song, Sexual Chocolate, on Valentine's Day. Yeah. I wish YouTube would allow me to play a lot of music. We could have some real fun here on these shows. Like, even more than we do now. There's a lot of things I'd love to do, but YouTube, they're like, well, they're very strict. There's certain do's and don'ts of things you're allowed to do, and The rule of thumb is that if you have to think about it, can I do this, can I not do this, then you're better off not doing it. That's pretty much the rule of YouTube. All right, Tamara said that Zelina claimed that she was not retiring from wrestling, which she says, I guess by default means she will wrestle again. She says, I can see WWE bringing her back in the future. And that's true. That is also very possible that Zelina Vega could eventually end up back in WWE. You know, her husband's not going anywhere because I believe he's under contract for quite a while longer. He might still be under contract for another 2 years or so. So unless they were to let him out of his contract, you know, I don't think he's going anywhere. And who knows? That could have an impact on her thinking as well about where she wants to land. She might not want to work for a different company. I don't know where her head is at on this issue. It was a very shitty thing that happened to her. Vita says, why would she want to go back? Again, very good question. Why would you want to go back? Somebody spits in your face, you go back so they can kick you in the crotch. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. On that note, let me thank you all. It's been fun hanging out with you here on a Sunday night. I do want to wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day, whether you're celebrating with somebody or not. At least we were all able to hang out together tonight. I appreciate you spending time with me on the stream. Please don't forget to hit that like button on your way out as we wind things down here. And do go back and check out episode 691 of the podcast from earlier today. Again, 2.5-hour show, covered a lot of different things. I also want you guys to go ahead and take advantage of this special offer for Sound Off listeners exclusively. My Valentine's gift to you. I'm giving you 30 days free of Amazon Music. And all you have to do is go to getamazonmusic.com/Solomonster. That's all you got to do. That's it. 30 days free. You can cancel anytime. Free Amazon Music on moi. On yours truly. So anyway, me and my little troll friend that I mentioned before, who's hanging out off camera here, telling me exactly how to move and what to do, just like those WWE referees do, he and I are going to go hang out. We're going to go watch some Bryan Cranston, the season finale of Your Honor on Showtime. Great fucking show. And I'm going to be back with you live here on YouTube on Wednesday night after AEW Dynamite. And then I'll probably be live on YouTube at some point later in the week, maybe Thursday night. We'll talk Elimination Chamber predictions, possibly. And then next Sunday, it's another double podcast, episode 692. And then live on YouTube after Elimination Chamber. I don't know that I'll be in necessarily this chipper mood after the Elimination Chamber as I was tonight after TakeOver. I hope so. I hope so, and I hope you'll join me. So until then, be well, stay safe, have a great President's Day week here in the States if you are off and have any time off. Happy Valentine's Day, guys. I love each and every one of you. See you guys on Wednesday night. Take care.